2 hours down somehow, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. And in case you missed any of this program, you can download it on iTunes, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome to the program our very good friend. He's Anthony Sanfilippo, and he's from the Delaware County Daily Times. Anthony, long time no chat.
Yeah, but now we got a big game tonight, right?
So now we got to get
on the horn.
Exactly. I mean, that's what makes the world a difference. All the other times we've talked to you, we've never really had a game to talk about. Now, today, for the first time tonight, we have the Jets Flyers to chat about.
There you go.
Let's start with this question. Let's start with, what's wrong with Jaromir Jagr?
Looks like it's just a mild groin injury. It's not going to be anything that's going to keep him out too long. Obviously not playing in the game up there in Winnipeg tonight. Paul Holmgren said he thinks Monday is a good possibility of return. Even if he misses that game against Carolina, I would think that he's probably back for the game Wednesday in New York against the Islanders. So maybe two games maximum, but might just be today.
Do you expect it to be Brizgalov or Bobrovsky in net today?
I think it's going to be Brizgalov.
The fans in Winnipeg are celebrating that, by the way.
Yeah. Peter Laviolette keeps his goalie choices pretty close to the vest, but he's really only started Bobrovsky so far this season when the team has had back-to-backs. I think he's only had one start when it wasn't on a back-to-back. And I think that he looks at this as another opportunity for redemption for Brizgalov. Brizgalov's played really well since that 9-8 loss to Winnipeg a couple weeks back. And over his last six starts, has a goals against average of 1.66 and a save percentage of 945. Those are probably even a little bit better than what the Flyers were expecting of him when they signed him to that big deal. So I think that Laviolette will ride the hot hand there and give Brizgalov a chance to finally put that 9-8 Winnipeg loss completely out of his memory.
Anthony, Chris Pronger obviously had the eye injury. Sporting advisor, has that affected his play at all?
You know, no, it hasn't. But you could tell that he's still annoyed with it. I don't think he like turned the puck over more because of the fact that he's wearing a visor. I don't think that, you know, he's having trouble handling the puck. I think that it just bothers him. He's a guy who doesn't like visors, never's liked the visor, doesn't want to wear it, and you could see he's constantly fidgeting with it when he's on the bench. Adjusting it, wiping it. I don't expect that it will be long that he has to wear it. And if you look at his eye now, it's almost completely healed up. The eye does heal quicker than any other part of your body. And so it's almost completely back to being 100% dilated, the pupil. And so I think once that happens, and he doesn't have any remnants of a scar or anything from the cut on the side of the eye, I think at that point it'll be up to Chris Pronger, and I think he'll probably take that visor off.
Anthony, later on in the interview, we're going to get to, you know, breaking down this afternoon's Flyers Jets game, but you know, this is maybe a little bit of old news at this point, but we want to get your thoughts on the 1-3-1 controversy. Obviously, it directly involved the Flyers, and I thought it was a little bit ridiculous that the Flyers did do that. But what were your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it's funny because people either fell on one side or the other. They either blame the Flyers or blame Tampa.
It was a polarizing issue.
Yeah, and it's a good issue to discuss. And, you know, I know the GMs talked about it at the GMs meeting, and they're going to keep an eye on it and see if there's something that could be done. I think that the Flyers are in their right. It's not good for hockey, but they're in their right to not move the puck out of their zone when a team is sitting back in a 1-3-1 trap, for the very reason that the whole point of the game is to play the puck. And if Tampa Bay is going to sit back and not play the puck, then the Flyers don't have to skate into the teeth of that neutral zone trap. All that Tampa would really have to do in that situation is have their front forward just come up into the zone and play the puck a little bit. He doesn't even have to go nuts, force it to one side. At that point, the Flyers then have to move the puck forward. You can't play rope-a-dope back there. But to sit there, I mean, to stand still is totally their prerogative. Now, was it a good idea to do it on a nationally televised game and, you know, in front of an American audience that's very casual to begin with? with the sport of hockey. No, that's probably not the smartest thing to do. But I think it rose issues. It made the issue aware to the rest of the league. And I think that you know, when the GMs met and talked about it, I think they're going to sit there and watch to see, make sure it doesn't happen with any kind of regularity. And the solution really is a simple one. I mean, you hear Chris Pronger calling for fines. I don't think you need to go that far. You hear some players say it should be a penalty. I don't think you need to go that far. I think all you need to do is it would be the equivalent of an illegal defense in basketball. If in fact the team's playing that 1-3-1, sitting with every forward back behind the blue line, very easily, referee's discretion, he blows the whistle, the faceoff goes into the defensive zone for an illegal defense. And I think you do that, it will prevent teams from sitting their fifth forward back and open the game up again the way that the league wants it to be.
Anthony, have you heard any linkages between the Occupy Wall Street movement and Peter Laviolette's Occupy the defensive zone movement?
Yeah, I know. It's pretty funny. I mean, it was great. I mean, that was one of the best things. I was somebody put that out on Twitter as it was happening. You know,
okay.
Occupy Tampa, Occupy defense.
Yeah.
It was it was really good. So yeah, I know that really is really kind of funny. And that's really what they were doing there, is just basically saying, well, we'll set up camp here with the puck, and we'll just stay here until you try and come and remove us.
If we see Kimmo Tiimonen in a tent, then we're really going to start to get concerned here in Winnipeg.
There you go. Exactly. So yeah, it's an interesting topic. And, you know, think back to the 90s when the Devils employed a similar strategy with that, what they called the left wing lock, which was a little bit different. At least they forced you. I mean, they actually pressured you to one side with their forward and their defenseman pinching up. But it's a very similar style, and that stifled the league. I mean, part of the problem, one of the reasons that, you know, they wanted to change the rules coming out of the lockout was that because you got a two-goal lead if the Devils got a two-goal lead, you weren't coming back. There was, because of they allowed that style to be played, and it didn't allow an opportunity for teams to come back and play the game. So the game was, in effect, over. And if you allow teams to do that again, we're going to get back to a lot of low-scoring 2-0, 2-1 hockey games. Purists might like it, but I'm not certain that the casual fan would appreciate that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show at Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on TSN 1290. We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, previewing today's Flyers-Jets game. Coverage gets underway at 2 o'clock here with Puck Drop. Hustler and Lawless at 11. Rick Ralph with the official Jets pregame show at 1 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Anthony, with apparently Jeff Carter may or may not want out of Columbus. We tend to believe that he does. You know, it leads into a perfect question regarding the return they got for Jeff Carter, and that's Jakub Voracek and Sean Couturier. Can you tell us how they've performed since that trade?
I think that trade has turned out to be probably the best move of the offseason so far for the Flyers. When you look at all the, I mean, obviously, you know, signing Jagr as a free agent was a pretty solid move, since he's averaging practically a point a game if you take away the one and a half minutes he played before he got hurt the other night. But as far as the trade goes, you got a guy in Voracek who, while he's not scoring a ton of goals, is really a playmaker, and you get to see it. He creates so much offense. He's got 10 assists already this season. He's been a key contributor both on the power play, and he's played on a couple different lines, on the second line with Danny Briere, and now more recently playing on the third line, where he's gotten rookie Matt Reed going pretty well. Voracek has been a solid player, and you can see he's starting to come into his own now in his fourth season in the league. And then, of course, Couturier, who before the start of last season, was considered by many scouts as the top-ranked North American player eligible for the draft. He went down with a case of mononucleosis and missed a portion of the beginning of the season, and then came back. And in the time that he was out, his ranking kind of fell a little bit. And the Flyers were fortunate, I think, because I know for a fact they were looking at some defensemen at that spot, and they didn't think that Couturier was going to fall that far. And to have Couturier fall to them was a gift. And he's been, at 18-year-old, he leads the NHL in shorthanded minutes for rookies by a large margin. He's their top penalty kill unit with Max Talbot, and he takes key faceoffs, and he's got 5 goals to boot from the fourth line. So, I think that, you know, when you look at what the long-term is going to be for him, he's going to be a long-term big-time player for the team, and you combine that with Voracek and the fact that Carter is miserable in Columbus, I think it's a slam dunk victory for the Flyers in that trade.
Anthony, Braden Coburn signed a deal recently, 4 years, $4.5 million. Can you give us
your take on the deal and maybe the Flyers' take as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Braden, the best part about Braden Coburn, I mean, he's, you know, when he first came here, a lot of talk was that he was going to develop a big shot from the point, and he was going to be a nice two-way defenseman, and, you know, who's got some size and some offensive skill. And then over time, it seemed like, you know, more and more they try to gear him into being more of a defensive defenseman, and especially under Laviolette. He's a guy who is just a rock back there. And the fact is he's, to be honest with you, you wouldn't know it when you look, but if you watch real close, he's the best skater on the team. Mm-hmm. You don't think of it because he's 6'5", but he's the most fluid skater they have, and he's one of the fastest skaters they have. He's a really well-conditioned athlete, and he could cover up a lot of mistakes. He could get back and make up for a bad pass or a turnover with just a couple of quick strides. So the Flyers really like the way he plays. He plays against a lot of top lines from the other team. A lot of people think, well, Pronger and Carl are going to be the ones that are out there against the top lines. Not all the time. A lot of times Laviolette will go with Coburn and Timonen in that spot just because he likes the way Coburn matches up against the better offensive players in the league. So the Flyers really wanted to reward him for his efforts, gave him a nice contract, nice raise. The way I look at it is, you say he's making about $1.5 million more than he was making this year. And the reason that it works is because you assume that the salary cap's going to go up again, and so that it's not really hurting the cap to have more money assigned to the player that you want to keep locked up for long term. So I think that ultimately it's probably a deal that's palatable to both sides. And of course, Braden's happy. You know, he's a new dad, and he's got a little bit more money in the bank.
There's some talk earlier this week that under a proposed realignment, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia wouldn't be in the same division. Now, I know that we all thought that was pretty ridiculous, and there were a lot of people that thought that. But what was the organization's response to that? The fact that they might not be in the same division as Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I can tell you. I talked to three different members of the Board of Governors when that story first broke, and all three of them told me that was, in all honesty, is Gary Bettman's plan, that he wanted to go four divisions. We all know that's the goal. They want four different divisions instead of six, and the plan was the two divisions in the Eastern Conference. We would have Philadelphia in one with the New York teams and Washington and the three Southern teams, Carolina, Tampa, and Florida, and Pittsburgh joining, which in essence is the Northeast right now, and add in Columbus so that you can have that Pittsburgh-Columbus trying to develop that rivalry a little bit since they're pretty close to one another.
I think that would be a slaughter in the interim.
Yeah, sure would. The Penguins hate it. They hate it. Even though that they would be going to that division, they don't want to lose the rivalry with Philadelphia. They don't want to lose the rivalry with New York. Obviously, they're two major hockey markets in the United States, and if you want to maintain a fan base and maintain interest in the sport in your area, you always want to have a good rivalry with the better hockey market. So to lose that and to only be able to play them twice a year, once at home and once on the road, was something the Penguins didn't want to do. And when I talked to the governors, they said that, you know, there is a groundswell of support, mostly among Eastern Conference teams, that will shoot down that proposal if, in fact, that's how it goes. So it's on Gary Bettman and his group to kind of now come up with an alternative that is still a four-division alignment but keeps Pittsburgh in the same division with Philadelphia and New York. I think that the solution to that would be to maybe include Nashville as part of the Eastern movement and get them in with the Southern teams. And then you would probably have to lose Washington back down to the other division to play against, you know, Carolina and the Florida teams. So it's not ideal for the league because it's not exactly geographically correct as they would like it to be, but at the same time, it's probably a little bit more palatable for the rest of the league to keep some certain rivalries intact.
Anthony, last question. You know, the Jets obviously played in Philly that wild 9-8 game. What should the Jets fans expect from the Flyers in terms of a style for tonight?
I think that the Flyers are 100% committed to playing a shutdown defensive game. They have no interest in playing in a game like that again. Not that they don't think that they could win a game like that. It's just that they really, you know, Laviolette, all he talked about going into this game was they cannot allow anything close to what happened against Winnipeg happen again. Now, granted, there were some weird deflected goals both ways in that game, actually. It was just an odd game to be at. And so, you know, you can't really always control tips and deflections and hitting skates and off of pant legs and stuff like that. But at the same time, you can certainly control areas. And I think that the Flyers are going to try and control certain areas of the ice and really not allow the Jets to get in front of the goalie, if assuming it is Brizgalov, and to have chances from in close. They're going to try and keep Winnipeg to the outside, keep the shots from a distance, really low percentage chances, and then the Flyers will take their chances then pressuring the puck in the other end of the ice. So I think that you're going to see, if I was a betting man, I would bet on a far lower scoring game, and obviously you're not going to get 17 goals, but I don't even think you're going to see 6. I think 5 is a maximum in this game, 3-2. Kind of game, maybe might even be 3-1. I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair because I think both teams are really going to look to concentrate on the defense after what happened last time.
Who's excited for a 0-0 shootout game?
we haven't had one of them in a while. That would be kind of okay.
That would be the ultimate irony given the 9-8 game before that, but that's always how it works. Anthony Sanfilippo, our good friend, thanks very much for joining us. You know, you are missing out on a Winnipeg snowstorm.
Yeah,
so,
you are.
You know, you might want to schedule that for next season.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, real quick, guys, is that one of the writers who covers the Flyers with me, who is up there in Winnipeg, he sent out a tweet yesterday, said they arrived and talked about the snowstorm. He said, some writers only go to Florida while others don't come to Winnipeg. And I think it was a little shot at me, and I said, that's okay. I don't mind. Maybe I'll make my way up there at some point. But, hey, if you get your team organized and then you know, get them into the playoffs, maybe at that 7 or 8 seed, maybe we can have a first-round meeting up there.
That sounds like a good idea. And, you know, don't worry, though. The Flyers apparently were still able to make it out to Earl's, which is a local bar/restaurant last night. So, you know, the snowstorm wasn't that bad.
Couldn't be that bad. That's right. That's good for them. I'm glad that they were out and enjoying the fine weather up there in Winnipeg.
Undoubtedly. Anthony, thanks very much for joining us. Have yourself a good day.
You too, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.
Anthony Sanfilippo, our good friend, covering the Philadelphia Flyers, doing a terrific job as always. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to do more on the Jets.
The line combination.
Line combination.
I got mine ready to roll.
You got them ready to go? Good. That's what I was hoping for. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza.
Yeah.
1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done. Have you checked there for your wallet?
No, but last week we let our listeners know about that breaking news that you had a coal-fired oven, and I wanted to know how the pizza making is going at the Mindell household. What are you making?
What is order Carbone?
What are you putting on your pie? And why aren't you inviting Richie and I over for a nice pepperoni pizza?
We've already determined you're banned from my house. I mean, that's been long established.
Yeah, I'm surprised that when you guys.
And frankly,
restraining order.
Frankly, when I make a pizza, all I do is I finger dial. You know, finger cooking with Phil. That's like finger cooking with Drew.
Well,
you know, I just dial Carbone, get my pizza delivered. It's some good stuff.
I'll occupy your front steps until you guys kick me out.
Fortunately, we have security hired already, and my dog is just ready to eat you, chomp on your leg.
Brixton's been trained to attack.
Yeah.
It's like I was talking with a Hart about when we were in New Jersey, and a lot of people don't know this, that when the Devils go on the penalty kill, they start the kill.
The best chance. Kill. When the Devils go on the penalty kill, exactly, and their home rink, the entire arena just starts chanting, kill. Kill.
It's hilarious.
Kill. It's also a little frightening.
Is that from The Simpsons?
It's somewhat frightening. Yeah.
They do that in The Simpsons?
Yeah, they do that on The Simpsons,
Yeah, and you guys know I'm a big Devils fan. I never knew they did that, and it was amazing. Great times in
New
York.
Not that big a Devils fan.
I want to go back. I feel like I was there last night.
You may have been. Is your wallet in New York?
Yeah,
you might have been there.
Richie, you have your line combinations.
Well, no, it's Drew. It's what I think they're going to do today more so than what I would do personally. I don't think they're going to break up this little Burmy Kane line and. Now let's leave it as is. I think, and we talked about it earlier, and I don't think it's going to, this is what I think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be much different. First of all, I think that people have to understand the Antropov-Ladd Wellwood line hasn't really done much since they've been put together, at least at even strength. And the matchups are different, obviously, for the power play. So I think that people shouldn't confuse results being wins with production from that line. One of my concerns with that line to begin with was Wellwood, Ladd and Antropov, that's not a fast line. That's not a line that can create space for one another. And I think that's a line that, for the most part, if you're going to want to cycle with Ladd and Antropov, well, then Welba doesn't have a good shot. So is he the guy who gets the pass from from the corner? You know, conversely, if you're trying to cycle with Wellwood, well, you're lost because he's not big enough to fight in the corners. So that mix didn't work for me. So I think what you have to do is you have to put Wheeler back up. He's got a goal. He's got some confidence. He adds a good speed element to that line.
I agree with that one.
And you put Ladd on the left side, Antropov in the middle, and Wheeler on the right side. And then what we said earlier, obviously you keep the GST line together, and then you put Fair, you ease him in on the fourth line right wing, with Stapleton and with Wellwood. And if you want to use those guys in the power play, go ahead. And then there you go. You got your four lines. You should be able to outscore the other team's fourth, although Philly's very deep. That's a pretty good fourth line. You can match your GST line. Maybe they're going to do the same kind of thing up against the Drew line today. Although I think it's interesting. I do think, Drew, that the Drew line without Jágr, without the big body, because last time they were doing matchups when they played Philadelphia, not that you want to follow anything you did in that game.
No,
but
I really don't think so.
Buffalo against Jágr is something that, if I recall correctly, they look to. So I wonder, because of no Jágr, a.k.a. a big body, they might put Bogosian and Oduya against Giroux because of Bogosian's skating ability and matching Giroux that way.
Who's the catalyst for the Flyers?
Well, Giroux. He's their best player. He is their best player, and he's probably one of the 15 best players in the NHL right now.
Yep.
Supremely talented, good skater, great hand.
And his ascension has been so quick.
Yes, yes.
People forget he's really young.
Yes.
But, I mean, yeah, this team has obviously, you know, it's changed a lot.
We
just had Anthony on, and this team was Jeff Carter and Mike Richards for six years. And, you know, now this team has changed, and you could make the argument that even last year when it was Richards and it was more kind of Danny Briere and Scott Hartnell's team,
sure.
And that was the line that was driving them. But I mean, I'm going to go on the record, and I'm wrong a lot about everything. I didn't think Philadelphia was going to be as good this year, and they're right now, what are they, second in the entire league, first in the East? You know, they've got four. Talk about four good lines. Is there another team that has the depth when you've got Van Riemsdyk, and even Hartnell's been not bad this year, and he's a guy, you know, that I've always been a big fan of his, but you know, he goes through ups and downs, he gets hot and cold, but when you go up and down the line, and I mean, Anthony said it very well, Couturier's on the fourth line, but he's contributing.
It's Maxime Talbot.
Max Talbot, a guy who was a huge part of the cup winning team in Pittsburgh, obviously got the game winning goal. But back to the Jets forward lines, Richie. Mm-hmm. I think that the two best players should be, if we're gonna put that label first line, Kane and Burmistrov.
No, that's the first line. Yeah,
they're the two best players, and I mean, Brian Little is your first line center, because it's really in between Little or Andro, and I think that's the point is well taken. Andrew Ladd on the left side, and you're basically moving Antropov down. Instead of Ladd, Little, Wheeler, you've got Ladd, Antropov, Wheeler. And the guy out of that six, I guess, who comes down, who was playing with Antropov and Burmistrov, is Wellwood. So now you've put Wellwood down.
Yes, yeah.
But the thing is, that's not fine.
That's what it should
be. He's not a fourth liner.
He probably is a fourth liner.
Well,
on a good team, he's no more than a fourth liner. Candidly speaking.
Yeah.
I know we got to go to break. We got Neil Greenberg on the other side.
Yep. Yeah.
Quickly, Ken Wiebe, just in his article this morning, Claude Noel says, I can read it to you here, because I think this is what I said earlier. I'm happy that we agree on this.
Yep.
It's in terms of, he won't rule out making a change based on the team winning. He says it's just part of managing the team. I'm not a believer in you don't change your lineup when you win, and I like that.
And that's a sign of, by the way, are you writing Ken Wiebe's articles?
No, but
Caldwell's a very smart hockey guy, and that makes sense.
Well,
should you ever not consider something because of?
Because of past results.
Yeah, coaches don't say, we won with this guy on the fourth line.
There are some guys where they want to attribute something that happened. They always want to attribute something that happens to something else, and it doesn't necessarily need to be that way.
It's not a static thing. It's constantly a fluid thing, and you have to adjust accordingly.
And Eric Fair is not going to play 15 minutes tonight, Drew. He's going to be eased in.
Sure. Before we go to break, quickly, which chant do you prefer from the fans tonight? Ilya or Brizgalov?
The Brizgalov.
Ilya.
I can't wait to hear those
Jets
fans.
I think it has to be two syllables. I'm more of a fan of Ilya.
I feel like I'm lost in woods.
Yes, that's... You might be... Have you checked the woods for your wallet?
Yeah.
That could
yeah,
be.
Me and Ilya Brizgalov are going to go looking for my wallet in Assiniboine Park Forest.
This segment was... This segment was brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. On the other side of the break, Neil Greenberg from ESPN Insider and the Washington Post. This is TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10:30 in the morning, Saturday morning here. I'm Drew Mandel, your host, joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
Do you have an American girl?
I do. It's very true. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program from ESPN Insider and the Washington Post, Neil Greenberg. Neil, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Neil. You know, the Caps are a team we're going to be quite familiar with this year. Play them six times. We played them Thursday night, obviously. Play them again in Washington this coming Wednesday. You know, we got to start with Alexander Ovechkin. He's the, you know, the straw that stirs the drink. He's the biggest name on the team. He was really only ordinary on Thursday night. What do you make of his lack of production as of late?
Well, I think he's been ordinary for a lot longer than that. I think you guys were talking about it a little bit earlier, and teams are taking away his space to produce. You know, the book has been out on him for quite a while. It's stick check him to the outside, and if he does cross over to the middle, the other defenseman helps out, and it's really done a lot to limit his shots on goal. And I think that that's really where his production is tapered off. His shots on goal have decreased every year for the past 3 years. And, you know, he's never been a great shooter. You know, his shooting percentage has never been abnormally high. So you take away those volume of shots, you're starting to see less goals.
Neil, you keep track of the scoring chances of the Capitals. Can you kind of tell us what that data has told us about the team through about 20 games this season?
Absolutely. It says that they're pretty mediocre at even strength. They haven't been able to tilt the chances in their favor at even strength. There's been seven games this year where they've only been able to muster two or less scoring chances when the game has been tied at even strength. So when you take away the scoring of whether they're trailing or leading, I mean, they just haven't been able to generate the offense that we're used to seeing.
Do you think it's maybe I've got a question here for you, but just on the topic of Alex Ovechkin, though, is it he's obviously one of the most talented players in the league. You can make the argument that aside from Sidney Crosby, he is the most talented player in the league. Are we making a little bit too much out of it? Is he going to get it going?
I think so. I mean, the underlying numbers aren't terrible. I mean, he's not seeing a whole lot of puck luck on either side of the rink. When he's teammates are shooting about 5% at even strength, which is pretty low. Typically, it's somewhere in the 9 to 10% range. And goaltending has been really atrocious at times. I mean, Bocun was a great signing in the offseason, but he struggled in net at times. Neuvirth has struggled in net at times. So, you know, I think we're going to see him get going sooner rather than later. But I think the 40, 50 goal seasons from Ovechkin are behind him.
You know, Mike Green recently came back and he basically played one period, and you know, not that much, and then he got hurt again, and it was a lower body injury. Maybe can you shed light on maybe that injury, what's happening, and what's the timetable for him to come back?
You know, they've been pretty vague about the injury. When he was first hit, it looked like a knee on knee, and then it ended up being said that it was a groin injury. He's not traveling with the team, and it's really there's no timetable for his return, but it's, the Caps need him. I mean, he's a key on offense. He's solid defensively. The power play has struggled without him out there. The team really needs him back as soon as possible.
Going back to Ovechkin, sorry, we're jumping all over the place here, but it seems to always come back to him. Isn't it incumbent on him as a quote-unquote superstar to develop another move so that, you know, the teams can't game plan for him? You know, you look at basketball, you know, Kobe develops new moves, you know, to, you know, when teams think they have a book on them. Yeah. Isn't it on Ovechkin now to develop something else that teams have to start game planning for?
I think so. I think it's also on Boudreau a little bit to put better positioned to succeed. You know, we've seen recently that Boudreau has taken Ovechkin off the point on the power play, played him more in the slot to give him some better looks at the net. You know, and I think, like you said, it definitely is on a player. I mean, that move hasn't worked reliably for some time, going back to the beginning of last year. And, you know, if you talk to some of the other league, they call it defense 101. I mean, it's not rocket science to stop them. So, you know, absolutely. I think in order to be a great player over a long period of time, especially when it comes to goal scoring, which has a tremendous amount of luck element to it, you know, you need to constantly advance your game, and you need to improve in almost any way that you possibly can.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Neil Greenberg. This is Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Jets Flyers get underway at 2 o'clock today. Hustler and Lawless are next after us, and then Rick Ralph with the Jets pregame show at 1 o'clock. Neil, how has Alex Semin performed this year, and do you see him finishing the season as a Washington Capital?
He hasn't been great. I'm one of the few that defend Alex Semin, and I think that, you know, the penalties that he has been taking has been way too high. You know, his reputation is preceding him now, so he's not even getting the benefit of the doubt on the ticky-tack penalties. So he spent a lot of time in the box. And, you know, the goal scoring is not there. I think he's on pace for about 16, 17 goals on the season, which is unacceptable for a player that's being paid $6.5 million. You know, just like any other goal scorer, you're going to see a tapering off as they start to get to 26, 27 years old. But, you know, as far as him ending the season with the Caps, I think so only because he has the penalty issue. He's been benched by Boudreau. He's not producing. I don't think that the team was able to get a fair value for him when he was at the top of his game based on the player that he is. I think it'd be even more difficult now to try to get some sort of value back for a player like Alexander Semin. And, you know, I think that a player like him is hard to come by. I do think he ends the season with the team. I would be very surprised if he was re-signed by the team this offseason.
You know, what's your take on Bruce Boudreau as a coach? And do you think that there is a possibility, if the Capitals do not get their game to the point that George McPhee wants, that they may get rid of him prior to season's end?
I don't see Boudreau losing his job during the regular season. I think this team, especially the performance of the coach, lives and dies in the postseason. They had a pretty bad losing streak last year, part of which was caught during the HBO special 24/7 and was square in the limelight. So, no, I don't think Boudreau – I think it would have to be pretty bad during the regular season for him to lose his job, and I think that would include significant evidence that he actually lost the room and the players just didn't respect him anymore. I think it just comes down to the postseason. I think you'll see McPhee, general manager McPhee, like he normally does, make some moves at the trade deadline or before to get his team in place to make a deep playoff run. And then if they don't make it into the Eastern Conference Finals, I think that probably signifies the end of the Boudreau era.
You know, the Capitals made, you know, several off-season acquisitions, and you know, a few of them have turned out okay, and some better than others. Which one, in your opinion, was the best off-season acquisition?
You know, I think Vokoun for $1.5 million was a gift. I think that he brings a pretty steady presence in net. Not that Neuvirth wasn't ready to be a number one goaltender, but I think whenever you have a chance to bring in a guy like Vokoun, at that cap hit, you have to pull the trigger. I think the Troy Brouwer and Joel Ward additions haven't really panned out the way that people thought. I think a lot of people were thinking that Brouwer was this 20-25 goal scorer, which he isn't. I think that people thought that based on the playoff production of Joel Ward that he'd be more of a scorer, but he's really more of a third line shutdown guy, which he's done okay, but, you know, I don't think that either of them have made the Capitals any tougher to play against as of yet. You know, it's still early in the season. We're not even at the 20-game mark, but I think the jury's still out on that. And I think, you know, a lot of people are disappointed in the way Roman Hamrlik has played. You know, he's looked terrible at times. His underlying numbers aren't terrible. I think that a lot of it is just some growing pains in a new defense and also not having the pairing of Mike Green to help him out a little bit. But I think overall, Bukuma is probably the best offseason signing.
Neil, we'll let you go on this last question. If this team is looking to rectify one issue, probably through the trade market, what would that issue be?
They have to be better at puck possession. They have to tilt the ice in their favor, especially at even strength. You know, they have too much offense, especially with the two top lines, to not be in the offensive zone a majority of the time. And right now that's just not happening. If they can, you know, if they can get scoring chances for Semin, Ovechkin, and Backstrom, there's no doubt that this team can score. And I think once they fix that problem, everything else falls into place.
Neil Greenberg from ESPN Insider and the Washington Post, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Neil. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Let's head to break. One final segment on the other side. You're listening to Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Fitting song, Drew.
Gary. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This final segment tonight is brought to you by... This morning.
10:45, Drew.
It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant on Comedy Club. Rumors has a great show lined up for tonight. Sean Cullen. Fabulous comedian in town.
It's hilarious.
Final night tonight at Rumors. You can contact the Rumors at 488-4520. See if there's any tickets available.
Yeah.
But Rumors Comedy Club, a fine sponsor of this tolerable Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Gary.
Gary, how you doing, buddy?
Hometown of Sean Cullen, Peterborough, Ontario.
Also the hometown of one Gary Lawless, if I'm not mistaken.
He played for the St. Pete's Saints in the Peterborough Community Church Hockey League, much like myself.
Oh, really?
All three of us have also played in a church league.
He's a couple of years older than me and had far less game than me, I'm happy to say. But
on or off the ice?
Both.
Gary, can you confirm that you actually have chosen not to speak to me because of our ongoing sandwich war?
Ezra, you don't rate a blood feud, okay? You've got to be a little higher up the totem pole for me. I have blood feuds. It's well known. I like to have scraps with other members of the media and stop talking to them and, you know, have incidents on the road where I won't sit at the same table as another guy. All of these things, it's true. I am petty and I'm petulant as well. I'll get into these disputes, but sorry, as you know.
See, Gary, you should have atoned for those things on Yom Kippur. We know you were mentioned in the rabbi's sermon, but you should have been there. You should have been there to atone for being.
I gotta be
things.
Honest. It's the greatest line I've ever heard. My dad is my roommate. Well, that, you know, in your effort to explain away that you're a grown man that wears a necktie to work every day, and I think you're over 30. If you're not, you're very close.
I'm close, 29.
And you live
at
home.
Thanks for reading my bio.
And you still live at home, and my dad is my roommate.
Yeah. And we have a great relationship. And you know, I've asked you if I could move in, but you've told me no and to stop calling you, so...
Why are you making things up? You don't have my number, so you can't call me.
That's true. I asked the communications team at the Jets for it, but they said that you've switched your number many times and that I should stop asking.
I've had the same number since 1999 when I got my job at the Free Press. They gave me a cell phone. I've had it ever since. All right, let's talk hockey.
Okay. Well, this is actually equally as entertaining, I got to tell you. But
for us, not for the listeners. Believe me. I've been listening to your show all morning.
It's the beauty of starting at 8 a.m.
Yep.
Gary, what are you expecting? What are you looking for tonight's contest then?
Well, a couple of things. Claude Giroux is from Hearst in northwestern Ontario, and Chris Pronger is from Dryden in northwestern Ontario. This is a kind of a home game for these guys in certain aspects. That, you know, I'm sure the Pronger family will be here from Dryden, and I'm sure there will be a strong representation from Hearst, Ontario, here to see Claude Giroux. These are Philadelphia's two best players.
Yep. Yeah.
Up front and on the blue line, and I'd be shocked if they both don't have big games. I'd also be shocked if Ilya Brzgalov is not outstanding. He's got something to prove. He made a major faux pas in the media last year. He came and made a nice apology yesterday. I would say it was opportunistic at best.
Yeah.
However, you know, the timing was a little conspicuous. He's going to want to be excellent. He's going to want to show the people of Winnipeg why they would have been better off if they had have gotten him and he could have enjoyed their parks. So I'm looking for all that to be on the Flyers side of things. The Jets, they have not strung three A-game performances, to borrow Claude Noel's phrase, together at once this season, and that's the challenge for them. If they're as good as they were on Thursday night against the Capitals, and or Monday night against the Lightning for that matter, we're going to have a hell of a hockey game.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, this is a great weekend in Winnipeg sports. We've got this game going today at 2 o'clock, and then the Blue Bombers tomorrow at noon in the Eastern Final. It's, you know, I'm jacked. It's like, you know, usually in our business, you go to bed on Friday night, and you've either got, it's a soft weekend, and you're, you know, you're going to spend time at the dog park and Starbucks, or you've got a major league weekend, and that's what we've got here. This is, we're broadcasting here today. We're broadcasting again tomorrow. We're on the air at 10 o'clock, and then there are games to cover for the free press after. To me, it's just, you know, this is why I got into this business. I was at home this morning making some cereal. You don't order cereal, Drew Mindell. You put the milk in the bowl with the cereal.
I can order anything.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
Gary, I think the world wants to know right now what kind of cereal you make. I do, at least.
Some gruel that my wife makes me eat. It's awful.
Big talker. She's obviously not listening at the moment.
I don't know if she's listening or not.
I figure she just turns you on for, you know, when you guys start right at 11 o'clock. I figure not a second before that, right? Gary, what do you make?
Just one other comment, you know, before you let me go. Ezra likes to talk a lot about Hustler and what Hustler gets up to at night. Well, it's 10:53, 7 minutes before air, and Hus just walked in, and he's looking to borrow his phrase, like a million U.S. tax-free. So he wasn't late, Ezra. And until Hustler is late for a show, you need to stand down. You are not allowed to beak or chirp Andrew Patterson until he's late for a show. And I can tell you right now, that ain't going to happen. And
I don't know. 10 a.m. is really early tomorrow, Gary.
I know for a fact that Hustler will be at Tijuana Yacht Club at 9:45.
Well, of course, he's going to be there from the night before. Exactly.
That's fine, but he'll be here. He won't be propping out some lame excuse. I lost my wallet. I got robbed at Safeway, Subway, whatever. Give me a break. You said I take my responsibilities seriously. You were late, bro.
You're absolutely laughing.
You know, Gary, you're right. And you also
said this was your last show.
Yeah, I'm going to the big show.
You're going to the big show.
Troy and Jay don't know that. In fact, I think one of them just woke up with
a fart. Sorry, Gary, I meant big house.
Yeah. Anyways, the Jets have got they've got their work cut out for them. I think this will be their biggest challenge of the week. For my money, Claude Giroux is the best player they will have faced this week. I put him right up there with Steven Stamkos. And the guy that was wearing the Alex Ovechkin jersey, that's not Alex Ovechkin. No, he's MIA. I don't know where he is.
Yeah, you had a good call about that a couple of days ago, and I guess Friday morning in the Free Press. Can you quickly, do you have any idea? I know they say Eric Fair is a game-time decision. Do you expect him to dress?
Yeah, they took him off the IR. Yep. They wouldn't have done that if they weren't going to play him. Because
okay.
It's cap, right?
Of course, you keep
the guy off the cap as long as you can. So if he's, there's no morning skate today.
Right.
He's in the lineup. I guess he could take the warm-up, and they could determine, you know, he didn't feel great or whatever, but no, he's going
to
go today.
Do you expect Jaffrey to pop out if that's the case?
Yeah, you know, Jaffrey or Stapleton, I think that it might be a decision that Claude Noel makes based on the opposition and line combinations.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, one of those two guys, I would think Tim Stapleton doesn't deserve to come out. He made this team at a training camp. He's been good. He's been a useful player. I'd be shocked if he came out. But
How do you take him out? He's on your second power play.
Yeah, and Jason Jaffrey isn't going anywhere. That, you know, they're going to keep him around for a bit and see what happens, because he's been good too. That they've got a real good situation right now where they've got a lot of players that deserve to be in the lineup, and that's going to force some other guys to look. I don't think it was any coincidence that Blake Wheeler had his best game as a Jet the other night with Eric Fair, you know, another big right winger, just about ready to go. You know, Blake Wheeler can't come out of the lineup after the game he had the other night. He took the decision out of Claude Noel's hands.
Gary, I know we've been joking around a lot, but I do have a serious question, even though you don't take me seriously at all. Do you have any idea what the media meal is going to be this afternoon?
I'll tell you what. Paul here in the Exchange restaurant just made me a sandwich, and
was it the 454?
No, but it was fantastic. It was a creation. And if I was
the 908,
our friend Harrison. No, it was just a nice, beautiful sandwich, yeah, perfectly done.
Nice.
Our friend Harrison might want to draft this guy because he's got skills.
He's a sandwich artist.
Without a doubt, this guy has talent.
Well, we look forward to. We'll have to make our way to the to the Exchange restaurant in the event level of MTS Center.
And Gary, I look forward to you not acknowledging my presence up in the press box later this afternoon.
You know, you make way more out of this than it is. Like, honestly,
I just want to be friends with you. To be honest with you,
well, we are.
I just
friends.
Want a friendship.
We're friends.
We've known each other for a while, and
we're friends. We're,
I feel like I'm losing you.
No, you never had me to lose. We are friends. It's an arm's length relationship, yep. And it will always be that.
I don't get the phone number. I get the BBM, but I don't get the phone number and any respect.
Gary, thank you. Have a good show with us.
Make sure you get your roommate your rent check this month.
We'll see you later on, Gary. Thanks very much.
Thanks, fellas.
Yeah, take care.
Here, Gary.
Big thank you to our guests in today's show. Of course, Gary Lawless just joined us. That was fabulous. Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail joined us earlier in the program.
Anthony, just flew by, Drew.
Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times joined us. Neil Greenberg from ESPN Insider and the Washington Post. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim, my name is Drew Mindell. We thank you for joining us from our lips to your ears. Have a good Saturday. Hustler and Lawless are next.